Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Earlier this week, we highlighted the issues surrounding bullying in the workplace. Well, tonight, we're talking about bullying in our schools. How often do you speak with your children about it? And what can you and the schools do about this? Our guests are Tanika Brown. She is co-founder of Bullying Is Not Dope. Chandrea Jackson-Saunders is a school psychologist. And Jasmine, she's a high school freshman who didn't go to school today because bullying at her school has become unbearable. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question about this issue. This is really an extremely important issue. We'd like to hear from some parents as well as anyone else who has been impacted by this issue. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can certainly tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thank you all for coming in. I really appreciate it. Let me start with you, Chandrea. Can you kind of encapsulate your thoughts about where we are with bullying in 2020? This is not the bullying of our childhood. Things are different.
That's exactly right. We have become more sophisticated, and not in a good way. And so bullying is a serious threat to our youth today, and therefore it's a threat to our families, and it's a threat to our communities. The latest poll that was done by CDC suggests that more than 20% of our high school students are indicating that they have been affected by bullying. 16% affected by cyberbullying. And then our middle school students, they are reporting the highest rate of bullying in school every single day, 25%. Those numbers are unacceptable. They affect the social, emotional learning and physical, physiological development for children. And we've got to stop it. And it's all of our responsibilities in school, at home, and in our communities. Everyone who touches a child is responsible for the welfare and well-being of every single child in that school.
Is this an issue more for girls being perpetrators or boys being perpetrators? Because a lot of people would probably think that boys are the ones who are doing most of the bullying. Has that also seen a bit of a shift?
It has. You have seen different numbers in different ways and in different communities. And so now in more of our urban communities, you're seeing more of the prevalence of girls. However, here's a couple things we have to take in consideration. And I like to start with a level playing field, that there is under-reporting of bullying and there is over-reporting of bullying. And so let's talk about what bullying is. I think it's fair to let's define it. And so it is considered to be unwanted, aggressive behavior with the intention of harming. It happens in multiple situations, multiple occurrences, or the likelihood of it occurring multiply. And most importantly, there is an involvement of an imbalance of power. And so that imbalance of power can be sought in any kind of distinguishable characteristics, such as sexual orientation, gender identity, race, color, weight, height. So it is prevalent. It is exhaustive. But it is present. And so we are seeing it in the schools at an alarming rate, and schools are legally now and ethically responsible for addressing that issue.
I want to get to that a little bit later, but Tanika, talk to me about not only your organization, Bullying Is Not Dope, and where that came from, but you are a mother and you also have some experience with this issue. Talk to me briefly about that.
So Bullying Is Not Dope is a Washington, D.C. based organization where we focus on bridging the gap between the effects of bullying and mental health illnesses in urban communities. And I want to dial back what you said about my experience. So as a mom, my son was actually a victim of bullying before in a public charter school in the district. And I handled the situation accordingly. And that's where Bullying Is Not Dope was birthed, behind his own feeling and expression of his bullying incident that took place.
What do you mean, it was birthed out of that?
So I believe in something called car talk. So when I picked him up from school and, you know, I asked him about his day, he expressed to me what actually took place that day in school. And I asked him, how did he feel about bullying? And he said, Mom, bullying is not cool. Bullying is not dope. Mm-hmm. So bullying is not dope is his actual feeling and expression.
Mm-hmm. Jasmine, talk to me about your experiences. You didn't go to school today, obviously, because this has been an issue for you. Talk to me about what's happening with you.
So it's mostly just constant nitpicking, constantly saying, oh, pointing out every little thing that you do, you know, stuff that you wouldn't think matters to other people that you'd even think about. Oh, why do I do that? Oh, why did I come to school dressed like this? That people point out that you didn't even think people will worry about when you wake up. And it's just like constantly people saying it. When you hear it the first time, you just brush it off. It's just a mean person saying that. But when you constantly hear it over and over and over, you start to think, do I really do that a lot? Do I really dress like that? Do I really act like that? Do I really do that? And it shouldn't matter to other people, but you start to think about it because it's constantly said.
How long has this been going on for you? I mean, you're a freshman.
Yes.
So this is your first year in high school. Is this something that you experienced in middle school at all?
Or? Not at all.
So this is a whole new bag going on for you right now. How have you been able to deal with it outside of, for example, saying today, I'm not dealing with this today, I want to stay home? Have you had a chance to talk to the administrators in school, teachers, what?
Yes. When it first happened, the first couple times, I went to my administrator and he said he would take care of it. And he sat me down, he talked to the people, he talked to me, and he said that we're all fine, don't do that again. But when he says whatever stays in his room doesn't go outside the room, don't tell your friend, don't post on social media, kids aren't actually going to listen when people say that. And so when we left the room, their word was it was going to stay in there, but it took outside of the room, it took on social media, and nothing was solved.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about bullying in the schools. This is part two of a two-part look at bullying. Earlier this week, we talked about bullying in the workplace. And today, we're talking about what's happening in the schools, what's happening with our children. If you have a comment, if you have a question about this issue, bullying in the schools and how it is impacting your children, how it is indeed impacting your home, I'd like to hear from you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Chandrea, are schools, in your opinion, really equipped to deal with this? Because you had a laundry list of issues that the modern bullying climate consists of.
Right. And so first of all, let me just say to Jasmine, I am very proud of you. I'm very proud of your voice here today because you represent a lot of young people who are struggling with this and haven't found the voice to be able to say so, to be able to speak up. And so I want you to know how proud I am of you.
Thank you.
Which is why it kind of drives, it always irks us to know that there had to be legislation passed. There had to be things put in place for agencies that service the needs of students to make sure that we are addressing this issue with fidelity, that we are implementing the policies and practices that are supposed to happen. So the question you ask, does it really have the meat? Can it happen? In 2012, the District of Columbia City Council passed the legislation called the Youth Bullying Prevention Act of 2012. And it required all agencies, but specifically those that work directly with students, like the public school system, to put things in place that we're able to address issues such as Jasmine. So is it really happening? It should. It has to happen. And agents like myself who work in schools are accountable for making sure that it does. And so when she talks about, you know, meeting with one person, well, that's great, but this is not a one-off kind of event. This is ongoing. And that's why we encourage our administrators to understand that this is not just about a package prevention program. This has to be a climate and school culture issue. This has to be really emphasized throughout the school. It's an everyday kind of approach. It's not just a one-shot deal. And so we have to. You ask, do we? We have to be able to do it because we must provide a safe and effective climate for our students. And when we don't, we're losing them. We're losing students like Jasmine.
Okay, yeah, we have to. But if I may, that's not what I asked. Everybody at this table is going to agree that we have to. That's just like saying don't steal.
All right.
Because, you know, it's not only is it immoral, but it is illegal. What I'm asking is, are schools adequately equipped to deal with the realities of that? Because the kids that are bullying Jasmine, they don't care about this, okay, about legislation.
They don't, but we do. And so when we are able to reach out and link, and we're not just talking about the confines of the four walls of a classroom or the 16 walls in a school building, we have to reach out and link with agencies, social service organizations, family support centers. We have to reach beyond the walls of the classroom and of the school building in order to make sure that these things are put in place for our students. And I said at the very beginning, we all play a part in this. The educator from 8 to 4, the parent 24 hours a day, the community member, the community agency organization. And so are we doing it in some absolutely in some schools, but just as many schools are not addressing it as they should be. And that's the problem that we have to address.
I want to bring you back in on this, Tanika, but I need to go to the phones real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about bullying, part two of our look at bullying this week. How it is impacting our children, our households in the schools, and what can be done about it. Monique, calling from D.C. quickly, what's on your mind?
Hi, how are you all this evening?
Great.
What's on my mind is my son is in kindergarten, and I'm very shocked that he's already having to deal with bullying. Right before the Christmas break, he was telling me, like, probably since about November, that the little boy had been saying things to him. He wore pink to school, and he called him a little girl. Things like that. And I said, just ignore them. You know, words don't hurt you, you know. But right before the Christmas break, my son told me that the young boy had slapped him upside his head and pulled his hair.
Now, let me ask you this, Monique. This is happening in school?
In school, inside the classroom.
So how are you attempting to address this?
So right before the Christmas break, I went to his teacher and I asked her, can I speak to her privately? It was just the three of us in the classroom. I put my son to the side and I walked over by the window to talk to her. And I told her what my son had been saying. She called him over and asked him what was going on. My son told her the exact same thing. He told me that the young boy had slapped him upside his head. She said, where was I at that time? He hunched his shoulders. He didn't know. Well, my son told me that the teacher's aide was in the classroom at the time, that the teacher wasn't in the class.
Monique, I know this is a very personal thing with you. I got a lot of folks on the line that need to get in. Have you found any kind of resolution with this?
So my son has been scared to, like, go to class and scared to go in his cafeteria to before care. So he said that there's haven't been any more hitting or anything. But for some reason, he's still having this fear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that with me. Real quick, Tanika, before I go to a break, that is not an uncommon thing. Whether the physical abuse is over, but there is still the psychological issue. Talk to me a little bit about that real quick.
So I just want to say that words do hurt. So as parents, we don't want to continue to suppress the fact that words do hurt and can have a lasting impression on the child's perception of themselves. What I will also add to that is we have to be sure to remedy conversations by having mediation as parent to parent. And also remember that children often watch what we do and how we handle things. And at the moment, the child was solicited in on the incident to actually tell tell his part of the story, that changed the narrative about how he will be protected going forward.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I've got to take a break, but real quick before I do, do either of you have some quick resources that you can share with us before I go into this break?
Yes, stopbullying.gov, DCPS.bullying. At dc.gov, as well as pacer.org. And so these are all prevention awareness opportunities for parents.
Real quick, Tanika.
I will also say Office of Human Rights, Youth Bullying Task Force.gov.
Okay, all of that information will be posted on our website after 8:30 tonight. If you are on the line, that includes Maria calling from Temple Hills, Robert in Rockville, Sarah calling from Virginia, please stay with us. Do not hang up. This conversation will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141, and you will be able to hear the program. Also, if you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will take your phone calls at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And you can hear this in every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment in its entirety via podcast on WHUR.com. Click on shows and drop down to podcast. You'll find it. Stay with us. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 in 15 seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are continuing our look at bullying, part two of our two-part examination of this issue. We're talking about bullying in the schools and the impact on our children. My guests are Tanika Brown, co-founder of Bullying Is Not Dope, Shondrea Jackson Saunders, she is a school psychologist, and Jasmine, she's a high school freshman. She didn't go to school today because bullying for her has become a bit unbearable. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me go back to the phone lines. Maria calling from Temple Hills. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just want to say that my daughter is going through the same issue. She's in the PG public school. She's in the sixth grade. This is her first year at this new school, and there's this little girl that, you know, she's been bullying my daughter. She's been calling her names. She does this to everybody, but the issue more or less is that she's even posted things on Instagram. I don't know how these kids are just doing these Instagram pages and just posting things, but when I mentioned it to the school, they haven't done anything besides had me fill out a bullying form, and nothing else has been done from that. My daughter, there's been times where she didn't even want to be in school, call me crying, telling me to come and get her, you know, and administrators, they really don't do too much of anything.
Let me see what Tanika has to say about that. That also is a common complaint from a lot of parents.
I want to say thank you for calling in this evening, and I do want to apologize for the trauma that your daughter is experiencing. What I would like to advise you to do is get familiarized with DCMR Chapter 24 that talks about the student rights in the DC public schools.
Now, I think she's in Prince George's County.
If you are in Prince George's County, you actually have another option and avenue that you can tackle as well. One, you can email me at bullyingisnotdope@gmail.com because I would like to actually walk you through an off-site and an offline discussion, a process that you can take to actually hold the schools accountable. At the moment you completed that bullying form, the school was responsible for launching a 10-day investigation. So what I don't want you to do is allow the school to get off by fulfilling their obligation to you at the moment you disclosed that incident to them. So you have some work to do, homework-wise, as far as following up with them. And I look forward to you emailing me so I can support you further.
What is that email, that Gmail address again, please?
Bullying is not dope maria.mcdonald@gmail.com.
Maria, thank you so much. Good luck to you. Let me say, the all of these pieces of information, the resources as well as the Gmails and the like, will be on our website. So if you're driving, perhaps just go to whur.com after 8:30 tonight, and that information will be posted on the website. Go right ahead.
Thank you so much, Tanika. Brings up an excellent point, which is why I believe it's really serious and important that parents know what is supposed to be happening, because then they know what they can hold us accountable to. And by us, I mean the school professionals that work within the school with their children. After that investigation, which they must conduct, we are also responsible for providing the support that the student needs. And guess what? There are at minimum three individuals involved in this issue. There's the bullier, the child that's doing the bullying. There is the victim, the person that's being bullied. And there's the bystander. Those are all of the three roles that play a significant part in making sure that we are able to address those issues. And that's why parents must hold us accountable.
When you say bystander, what do you mean by that?
So those individuals that stand by and watch and witness certain things happening, they are just as critical to this scenario as anything else. And so part of a comprehensive school plan teaches that bystander what they can do in a situation such as that. Of course, based on how safe it is, how motivated they feel to be able to get help, but the one thing they can always do is to report it. One of the other requirements that we're supposed to have is an anonymous reporting form so that students can report, parents can report, teachers can report an issue or an incident that's happening anonymously, and then school administrators must address that as well. All of that is a part of the law, and so when we say it just exists on paper, absolutely. But it's the law that parents can hold us accountable to as long as they know that they have that at their behest, and that's why it's important.
Maria, thank you so much for your phone call. Jasmine, I'm sure that you've probably witnessed other people in your school being bullied by those who may not be in, you know, your orbit. What is the attitude about reporting this? Are students more or less reluctant to do that?
I feel like kids just don't care. Like, they won't look at it as bullying. They'll just, like, laugh it off. Like, oh, you just said a joke. And they won't care. They won't tell a teacher. But jokes are supposed to be funny. Jokes aren't supposed to hurt your feelings. Jokes aren't supposed to make you think twice about your appearance or anything. And kids nowadays just laugh at it and think it's funny. And so they'll say it, and then it'll just keep going, and it won't stop.
What do you know of any other students who perhaps may have been bullied who have reported this happening?
Yes. I have friends that have been bullied, and they'll report it. I'll go with them if they're scared to go by themselves. And the administrators will say the same thing that they say to me. They'll say, oh, we'll look into it. We'll make sure everything is resolved. Mm. And it still continues and keeps on happening.
Help me with something, Tanika, because one of the things I think traditionally, and you know, bullying has been around since schools have been around, since playgrounds, sandlots, the whole nine. And when I was in school many, many eons ago, when these things became an issue and parents were brought in. Is that a solution now to addressing this?
I would say yes and no, and I'm going to elaborate why. So the reason why I say yes is because that will open up the dialogue around the problem. The reason why I say no is because you have children that are parents, and you don't want, they have the notion that you can't talk to my child or my child doesn't do anything wrong. So oftentimes mediation, as it once was the first level of solution, nowadays it isn't. So now you have to figure out, how do you manage those different personalities to really find a true solution around this problem?
Hmm. Has the culture changed, Chandrea, where you do have children, you know, for example, who may have other issues that may lead them to bullying. I mean, who are these children that are doing this? What's going on with them?
Right. And normally, usually, there's a lot going on. A lot of unresolved issues that have gone unreported, underreported, unaddressed, unresolved. You usually find that there are several dynamics that impact a child. It's family composition. It's supervisory capacity. Are kids being supervised appropriately? Access to things and that they should and they should not be participating in. It's the community. When we become desensitized to violence and, you know, guns and fighting. So there are a lot of issues that impact and make this opportunity for the bully available, which is why we don't blame. You know, we address the bullying issue, but we recognize that the bully is as much of a victim as the person being bullied, because generally they are involved in a lot of issues that no one has addressed with them. And what we know is that if we don't address it in the childhood area, there's a potential that it continues and develop through adulthood. And then we talk about spousal abuse. We talk about child abuse. That's the continuum that this goes on when we don't address it at a very early age.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Robert calling from Rockville. Robert, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Go right ahead.
Well, honestly, man, experiencing it as a young kid, too, I experienced it in high school. I was bullied. Honestly, I was dealing with getting jumped pretty much every single day. And these were guys that were on my football team.
Mm.
You know, so there's also politics behind the issues with bullying and the problems that we have to deal with that. But, you know, I'm a big advocate for self-defense. I'm a big advocate for instilling self-defense.
Robert, I'm going to have to let you be a father, and we're going to have to drop you out of the conversation, but I hope you can continue to listen. But there's one thing that you did say that struck me. He said that he was an advocate for self-defense. Here's a problem with that. Since Columbine, the world has changed. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing extreme violence, sometimes deadly violence, not sometimes, frequent. Mm-hmm. Deadly violence attached to the genesis of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
That is not only probably the scariest thing, but also truly the issue that needs to be addressed. And I think the foundation to that is, why can't y'all just leave folk alone? I mean, you know, am I oversimplifying it? Because I can only talk about my own experience.
Right.
You know, where, again, when I was asking about, you know, parents, mm-hmm. when you have, you know, the bully and victim, and then parents come in, and the first question is, why are you bothering him?
Right.
Am I oversimplifying it?
I would say yes, in this generation and in this day and time.
Okay, so what's the issue with that?
So the issue with that is now, when once before the community was allowed in the school, right, where you had the churches, you had the neighbors, it was a complete village that was a part of the solution. Now, the community is no longer a part of the solution, far as being that crosswalk. When the children were walking to and from school, your neighbor could meet you at the corner. Your neighbor could go to the school in your parents' place and speak on their behalf to provide that additional support. Nowadays, is no more neighbor to neighbor. You can't talk to another person's child, reprimand or discipline, or even have a conversation with another person's child. So once upon a time in life, it will be oh so simple. But now, unfortunately, it isn't, because the village and the community is not what it was once before.
So, Chandrea, I'm assuming that you have counseled bullies, bulliers,
bystanders, parents.
Okay, so... So what happens in that? I mean, is that question asked? Do you as a school psychologist ask the victimizer, the bully, why are you doing this?
Right. Well, you start there, but it is never that simple.
So what happens when you ask that question?
It just is not that simple. What generally, depending on the age level, they may tell you, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And they really don't, because there's generally so much underlying in anyone's behavior, but more specifically a child's behavior, who does not have the wherewithal, not sophisticated enough to really tap into those feelings about why they do anything about what they do. Tanika said it best. Children are modeling behavior that they see. Children are doing what they see others do within their home environment, within their community. When you're not teaching children not to be mean, not to speak ill, these are practices that start before school. They should. But when they don't, it's left upon the school environment to teach those things. We cannot assume that what she learned and what you learned is what everybody else in our classroom learned, because it's not. How many times can I tell you about a conversation where a parent says to me about their six-year-old, I told him if somebody hit him, he better hit him back, else when he comes home, I'm going to whip him.
Okay.
You know how you hear that, right?
It was told to me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, but here's the thing. We can't all do that, because then they're going to have chaos. So what we have to do is talk about things like restorative practices, restorative justice.
So what does that mean? What does restorative justice mean for the 6-year-old mm-hmm. who is hearing from parents, or the 16-year-old who is hearing right. from parents, if someone gets in your face or somebody pushes you or somebody hits you, that you hit right. them back? What does that mean?
So, of course, it's all going to be developmentally appropriate. We do restorative practice and restorative justice mostly in the upper elementary grade levels, 5th, 6th, 7th, and on to middle school, because the idea is to form a relationship where everybody's feelings are valued. No one is wrong. Your behavior is not appropriate. Let's talk about why you do what you do. All of this is really about communication and being able to let children know about their feelings and emotion, that they have a right to have them, but then there's a way to handle them. These are conversations that are not happening, and that's why we talk a lot about social-emotional learning, about positive behavior and interventions and supports. There has to be a climate where this is appropriate and acceptable. Is it one conversation or two? Absolutely not. Can it be something you practice on Monday, but you never hear about it again for the rest of the week? Absolutely not. This is still about teaching. Back in the day, this was something that was expressed in homes, most homes. That's not happening, but it still must be taught somewhere.
I want to throw a monkey wrench in there for a moment, because I'm thinking about this young queen to the right of me, Jasmine, mm-hmm. because we've spoken so much about laws and policies and how people have to do something. But let's talk about what people are not doing. We're paying teachers, we're paying administrators to fulfill an obligation to the student body that they are not upholding. So now the bigger question is, what does Jasmine believe need to happen in order for the school to be safe? Because when we send our children to school, we have to be honest about their being deprogrammed. And what about the teachers?
What do you mean deprogrammed?
They're being deprogrammed by conversations, social media, gang initiations, the exposure to all of these new synthetic drugs. You know, they're losing friends of their age to violence now. So we have to think about the grief and the trauma. Just the weight of the world now is on their shoulders, on top of school, testing, homework, and park, right? So while we're thinking about all of these different variables, when they go to the teacher to disclose an incident, or go to the administrator to disclose an incident, they're going to them with hope of a solution. And when that solution does not happen, right, we have 160,000 teens per year skip school because they're victims of bullying. So how do we get them back into the school? How do we reestablish trust from the student's perspective? Because you said a lot about what the law and the policy says and states.
Absolutely.
But we have a lot of schools, a lot of administrators and educators who are not fulfilling that obligation to the students. So now the question becomes, what does accountability look like from the administrators and the teachers to the students?
Let me ask Jasmine, what, in your opinion, Jasmine, would need to be done to make your school and other schools that may be dealing with this issue just like you are struggling with it to make them safe?
I feel like communication with your parent is most important because the person that has the most authority over you is your parent.
Absolutely.
So when all this started happening, the first person I told was my mom. And when it kept happening, my mom, she emailed the school and she's wondering why it's not getting addressed. And she's going up to the school, figuring out why nothing's being done. And they just say, we'll look into it. But I think that the solution to all of this is your parent. Get your parent involved. Mm-hmm. Don't just not say anything and think that it'll just all go away and they'll just stop being mean to you. Tell your mom, tell your dad, tell the person that's watching you, that has the authority over you, because they'll make sure that it gets handled.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I've met your exactly folks. Your right. folks are on it, so, you know, which is, you know, everybody, every child should have parents like yours that are involved, and so, you know, I think that is good to see. Let me go back to the phone lines real quick. Sam calling from DC. Sam, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I'm not that old. I'm only 24, so I was recently in the school system some years ago, and I can say from my personal experience, I was bullied all through middle school and like the beginning years of high school. It wasn't really until I started to notice that there's certain tendencies that staff would even do. Like, you would see favoritism. The same kids that would be getting suspended every week will be in their office every week. They will almost become friends. I saw staff members, like, the way they would go about, like, the sit-downs, they would try to solve the problem on the first level. And I would sit down with my bullier, and they would try to say what happened. Whether I just playing as friends, what's happening. They would almost, like, try to, like, policemen coercing, just saying, oh, nothing happened. That was just horse playing. And then sometimes if you get your parents involved, it would just end up being like they'll get suspended for a couple of days, a parent-teacher conference. I would sit down with the other parents, and then nothing will happen. A couple of weeks at the bus stop, there'll be another fight, a fight on the bus, multiple places. But it'll be until, like, the police or anything serious got involved, it would just continue. They would never truly get expelled or removed from school. They could attack and fight multiple students, but nothing would happen. It was just really hard to go through school and see, like, other kids get attacked. And I'm like, yo, he just lost three teeth in a fight. He got jumped in the stairwell.
Mm.
Why are the other kids still, like, walking through? It would be craziness.
Mm. That's the thing. Sam, thank you so much for sharing that with us, because I think that is the grim black and white image that hasn't really been, you know, mentioned, you know, that this isn't just about, you know, the name calling. And I mean, you know, some of the stuff can be, you know, can be particularly violent.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be a way to address this and be beyond the policies and, you know, and the laws. It's just like, you know, they said you can't legislate racism. Can you legislate this kind of, you know, cultural construct?
You have to teach. You have to teach. In order to get the kind of change that we're talking about, we have to teach our young people. And it often it is laid right at the doorstep of the teacher and the administrator. And I'm not backing away from that level of responsibility, because when children spend that time with us every single day, we do have that burden and that responsibility to do something about it. But it is all of our responsibilities. It is not just the school's responsibility in order to address this issue. I believe that we can, and I believe when parents know about what the legal and the ethical requirements are, and there are legal requirements, hold the school system accountable. Jasmine, I'm, again, so proud. Parents have to be the people to walk this down the road and make school systems do what we're supposed to do. But let me tell you, it is time and it is resource. So you may have to not look at a park test or not look at math and reading in order to do the things that you have to do in order to create the climate in a school. This is not just about a classroom. This is not just about an individual. A school, in order for it to work, like Jasmine's, this has to be addressed from the top down, from the left through the right. This has to be consistent use of positive behavior intervention, has to be a consistent use of the legal ramifications that we have in place. Listen, you talked about Chapter 25. That has changed in D.C. public schools as of this week.
What is Chapter 25?
So it is the tool that we use in order to handle what we call tier 1, 2, and 3 behavior of students. So if a student does something that's a tier 1 behavior, you can do this to them. That's a consequence. If it's a tier 2, if it's bringing a weapon to school, that's a tier 3. There's certain things you can do. If you read it, what was just passed this year, it has been, so my language is watered down, but I know from a mental health perspective, the options that have been open to administrators about what they can do in terms of suspensions, out of school placement, like assigning them to certain schools that can specifically deal with these kind of behaviors, it has been rolled back tremendously. And so schools now have a lot of shackles on their hands about what they can do about these types of behaviors. Is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. It's not immediate, but the student support professionals like myself in a school then are charged with making sure that we have certain things in place. And it's difficult.
But see, then it starts to get into that long-standing conversation, right, about excessive suspensions and explosions of black and brown children.
Absolutely.
And that's another show.
Right.
But I think that it does
play a role.
Touch on, and like you said, play a role. Mm-hmm. Earlier, Tanika, you spoke about, first of all, Sam, thank you so much for sharing in this conversation. I appreciate it. Earlier, you spoke about walking a parent through the process. Can you kind of encapsulate that and kind of give our listeners an idea of what that entails and what it means once your child comes home and says, Johnny hit me, or Johnny is bothering me?
Sure. So I'll walk you through a snapshot of a public charter process, because they're governed by a board. So when it comes to Johnny hit me, Johnny's been hitting me all week, you notify the teacher via email, because paper tells a story. It's all right to initiate a phone call and leave a voicemail, but the paper trail creates the story. And the story is the weight that you need to continue throughout the process. So you initiate an email, request a meeting, and you outline your concerns in that email to the teacher. At the moment, you request a mediation session, and the mediation session hypothetically does not unfold the way that you desire, then you need to transfer that to the school principal requesting an immediate investigation into this bullying incident. At the end of, say, the 10-day investigation, you as a parent are entitled to the write-up. These were the individuals that we talked to on this date and time. This is the school's position at the end of this investigation. This is what we're looking to do, or what we unfortunately cannot do based on the fact findings. Depending on what the fact findings are, if you are not satisfied, depending on the nature of the bullying incident, then it's time to transition it up to the next level, which may be the actual school board itself. And in this instance, now it's time for you to, one, not forget about the child, but two, be open to therapy. Because keep in mind, at the moment you're going through this process, your child is continuously reliving that trauma that he or she has endured. And what I want to emphasize is, as parents, we cannot be closed-minded to putting our children in therapy at the moment they have experienced something to this magnitude. So, as you stated, Jasmine parents are doing a phenomenal job, because it is going to take a lot of time, and it is going to take a lot of resources, and it's going to take a lot of fight. Because what is so unfortunate now is these processes and these timelines are extremely egregious. You're talking about a 10-day investigation, then you have to come back, say, another 3 to 5 business days to wait for everyone calendar is available to get an appointment. So this is where the mental and the emotional stress comes in, on not just the family, but on the student as well. So that's just a quick snapshot of the process. Email the teacher, request mediation, go to the principal to request an immediate investigation. You're entitled to the fact findings of that investigation, names, dates, and times of people that were involved. And depending on the information given to you, please enroll your child in therapy. And also be sure to escalate it up to the school board with all of those supporting documentations if you see fit and feel the need need to take it to that level, but do not stop until you have reached a concrete solution for your child.
I only have about a minute left. I wanted to let Jasmine have that last minute. Jasmine, you said your parents are involved and the school knows. From your perspective, what's your next plan? What do you believe is ahead for you as you try to address this issue?
I think that I should talk to the person, and if they actually want to resolve it, I'm not saying we have to be cool and close and talk every day, but I just want it to stop. Like, you don't have to talk to me. All we have to do is be in a class together. So I don't understand why you have to say little things. All we have to do is sit in class for 30 minutes, leave, and you don't have to see me for the rest of the day. So I think that's the only way we could resolve it.
Jasmine just described restorative justice.
She also described what we hope is what we call adulting.
Yes.
So, let's say that. Jasmine, thank you so much.
You're
good
welcome.
Luck to you.
Thank
also,
you.
Tanika you, Brown and Chandrea Jasmine Saunders, I appreciate you all coming in. And hopefully we've been able to help someone through this process. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, January 16th, 2020. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.